It's not uncommon for divine theophanies, revelation of the divine, to take place on hills and mountains. But I love the description of one critic who says that this scene of the Transfiguration takes place in a suburb of heaven. There are three consequences for the disciples of the Transfiguration. First of all, this visible alteration of Jesus before the eyes of his closest followers demonstrates him to be more than a merely human teacher. He can't be cut down to size or dismissed anymore as just one of the prophets of Israel or a divine miracle worker. Then secondly, his association with and consultation discussions with Moses and Elijah demonstrates that he is the Messiah. All those frustrated expectations of the shepherd kings of Israel who had let their people down so badly, all the longed for expectations of a divine deliverer have at last been answered. And then thirdly, the voice from heaven declares Jesus' true identity as the Son of God, somebody on a different plane altogether to any other religious leader known to Israel. Now, just before the Transfiguration, that rather decisive conversation has taken place at Caesarea Philippi, where Jesus puts a question to his disciples, "Who do men say I am?" And only Peter gets the right answer, which is immediately followed by the first prediction of the Passion, which of course Peter and the others find very hard to accept. So this experience builds on that. It's a gigantic step forward in the disciples' developing appreciation of the scale of the divine plan they've become caught up in. It reveals the kind of hidden depths of the conversation at Caesarea Philippi. Peter's response about building three booths is that of a practical man confronted by an overwhelming situation. What can I do in this situation? Now, for the first eight chapters of Mark's Gospel, Jesus has triumphed over every foe, over demonic forces, over illness, over critics, and over nature itself. But a turning point, a crisis, is reached when Jesus announces his passion, as he does in the conversation at Caesarea Philippi. In the minds of most, talk of death implied defeat and failure. And that would mean the failure of Jesus' mission. What is needed is a convincing and dramatic indication that Jesus continues to be God's agent of redemption. The Transfiguration serves this purpose. It reassures Mark's readers that the necessity of Jesus' death does not result from a withdrawal of heavenly favour. Jesus' mission and purpose have not been compromised. God is just as much with Jesus after the announcement of his passion as he was after his baptism, and he still claims Jesus as his unique son. Whereas the heavenly voice at the baptism might have been heard only by Jesus, now three of his immediate and closest followers have heard it. The message, "Hear him," has been clearly taken on board. And the message is that only Jesus can now fulfill God's mission on earth. This scene also reveals who God really is. It's what one commentator called a demonstration of the Trinity in time. God's shimmering plenitude of being. God's triune identity as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. It points the way forward to the kind of God that we shall be with forever and the kind of life that we shall enjoy with him forever. And it's a reminder that after the death and humiliation of Jesus in Jerusalem, this too is his glorious destiny and his homecoming to which he will return. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.